I want to be rich. I know you thought maybe this was going to be an admonition against all of us who have some resources. Not so much. And that's not just a device I'm using to get our attention in addressing the whole issue of wealth and riches and worldly goods. I really want to be rich. I always have, and I suspect I always will. And so when I hear the lessons today about godliness combined with contentment, and that we brought nothing into this world, so we'll take nothing out of it, but if we have food and clothing, we will be content with these. Somewhere deep down inside, I say, well, if I clean it up, rubbish. But those who want to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped by many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. A lot of sermons have been preached on that, I bet. A lot of pulpit pounding. And even when I hear those who want to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped, and they'll be plunged into ruin and destruction, I still say to you, I want to be rich. In our gospel lesson, we hear of the rich man and the poor beggar by the name of Lazarus. It's interesting that the one who is poor and hungry and the dogs are lapping at him, he has something that the rich man does not. You know what that is? Faith. Okay. And what else does he have that the rich man doesn't have?
Poverty.
He has poverty. Thanks. It's enough out of the choir. You know what he has? Just in the story. He has a name. He has a name. Lazarus. The other guy's just a rich dude. You know, I guess if you have enough money, it doesn't really matter what they call you. In this passage, it's a powerful way that Jesus is saying that, you know, if you haven't been paying attention to what you have, and by that he's meaning the story of faith, if you haven't paid attention to Moses and the prophets, if you haven't paid attention to the tradition of your faith, what difference is it going to make if someone were to come back from the dead and tell you? In many ways, it foreshadows Jesus' resurrection and his appearing before his disciples and others. And it's like, wow, that'll make you believe. But I'm not sure it has that much of an impact. Certainly not 2,000 years later. They have Moses and the prophets. They have the witness of people of faith from ages past. If that doesn't help, why would we think that some intervention right here, right now, would cause us to believe? The rich man apparently does at least have faith. It's long been a prayer and a song of people who are impoverished that someday they will receive their reward in the sweet by and by when we reach those heavenly shores, that all of God's people will be taken care of. When I get to heaven, I'm going to put on some shoes, some new shoes, and I'm going to walk all over God's heaven, say those who have nothing to put on their feet. How many people remember the Frank Capra movie, It's a Wonderful Life? If you don't know it, where you been? It's been out for a long time. In that movie, Jimmy Stewart's character is a guy that certainly is not rich. In fact, he's in some serious financial difficulty. And when he's about to throw away his life, an angel is sent to him, his guardian angel, which is a bumbling fool by the name of Clarence. And at one point, as Clarence is trying to show Jimmy Stewart what his life really means and what the world would be like had he not been a part of it, they're having a discussion about money. And Jimmy Stewart doesn't have any, and he asks Clarence if he has it. He says, "We don't use money in heaven." And he says, "Well, that's great," he said, "but it comes in real handy down here." It does. I have no doubt that my desire to be rich comes from my family of origin. My father was one of 13 children. Now, even if you've got a lot, it doesn't last long once it's spread among 13 children, and they didn't have a lot. They worked a small farm in the southwestern part of West Virginia, right on the Kentucky border. Most of that farmland was on the mountainside, and it's hard to somehow glean a living or even a decent crop when you're planting it on the side of a mountain. They didn't even own the land. For three generations, they leased that land, rented it from someone else, and after all that time, they had never made enough money to even buy that godforsaken piece of property. They barely got by. At 17, my father said, "I've had enough of this," and he joined the army and got the heck out of Dodge. And he did all right. He was career military and then worked for the federal government until he retired. Never made much money, but he had a salary. And when he died, he owned 2 acres of land and wasn't much of a home or a structure. It was a double-wide mobile home sitting on that 2 acres of land. It wasn't much, but it was his, and he owned it. And he left that for my mother. I remember growing up, we'd go and visit those relatives down in West Virginia, which can take a while when you have 13 or 12 brothers and sisters, not to mention all the aunts and uncles and cousins. There were a lot of them. And every time we stayed with folks, we'd go down there and spend a week or so, but we never stayed in anybody's house more than a night or two. And then we'd go over and we'd spend a night with another aunt or a cousin or somebody. I could never keep them all straight. And any time when we left, it was always, you know, we'd have breakfast. And these folks that didn't have much, somehow they could put on a breakfast. And we'd leave right after breakfast, even before the plates had been cleared away. And every time, every house, every year of my life, I would see my father lift up that plate, and he'd put some money under it. I never really knew, you know, how much. I remember once seeing a $50 bill, and it was like, "What? I've never seen one of those." What? And that it annoyed me for a long time. Here we're going to these people that they never did anything for me. Nothing. They never came to see us. They weren't particularly nice, when I went to see them. And here he was leaving them money. I had a resentment or two about that. And it took a long time, age and maturity, growing up. You begin to put that all together, and you realize, or I realized finally, what that was all about. He was the only one in his family that had made it out of that degree of impoverishment. I didn't think we had anything. And by worldly standards, we didn't. But for his family, we sure did. And he shared that. The lesson from Timothy says that about those who are rich. They are to do good and to be rich in good works, generous and ready to share. I remember having that same experience of generous people when we lived in South Dakota and worked among native people there, the Lakota. Again, people that didn't have at times two dimes to rub together. Carroll County, South Dakota, where the Pine Ridge Reservation is, the unemployment rate there is about 80%. It's a godforsaken place. It was the best that our government could give, I suppose. And I've always appreciated those folks, because even though they had nothing, when somebody was in need, resources came from somewhere. I don't know. But there was always enough food to eat, and people who were in need found a place to stay. And that always moved me deeply. But even out of those experiences, which should, although my wife always says there are no shoulds in this life, you would think those experiences about wealth and poverty might have tempered me to some degree, but I have to confess, I still want to be rich. Godliness combined with contentment, that sounds good. I agree with that up here. But deep down here, there's still that old tape that plays. I know we bring nothing into the world, and so that we take nothing out of it. And if we have food and clothing, we'll be content with those. And most of the time, I am. But I still want more. And not just rich in worldly goods, not just with stuff I can put in my pockets, but with stuff I can put in my head. I want to be a lot smarter. I'd love to be an intellectual. I pretend to be sometimes, particularly with others of you that are pretending you are. and we all have this nice little delusion. I want to be smarter. And I want to be a lot of things. The most thing that I'd like to be is more like my father, who was compassionate and generous. Because I know that deep down, that's just not how I'm wired. And I work at that. I work hard at that, but it doesn't come easy. My father was far from rich. But when he died, as I said, he left my mother a piece of land and a place to live and a little pension, compliments of a grateful nation. I want to have a lot more than what I have. But what I realize, even if I took the combined wealth of you good folks that are sitting right here, and that would be a sizable collection of riches. I'd like to have that, to be honest with you. I really would. But I have to acknowledge that an even greater riches were possessed by my father. That what he had, his generosity and his compassion, I would trade all the wealth in this room just to have a fair portion of that. Godliness combined with contentment. We brought nothing into this world, and so we'll take nothing out. Let us be content. Let us be content with what we have. Amen.